can't rest on.
Coming up, it's the World Cafe. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Find playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats had a dream, and he remembered one thing from it. An album title. Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin. You can guess where this is going.
And I said to myself, wouldn't it be funny if you did that? Lots of my ideas that I go through with start with like, oh, that would be hilarious.
The Mountain Goats' 23rd studio album is indeed called Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin. Darnielle calls it a full-fledged musical, and it features contributions from a guy who knows a thing or two about Broadway, Tony Winner and Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda. Coming up, we'll hear live performances from the Mountain Goats, and in our interview, he'll talk about making the new album, and we'll get a special off-the-cuff rendition of You'll Be Back.
I will regret singing that song to you because it will be running around on a loop in my head for the next 5 days, right? Because it's just like Dancing Queen level of greatness.
It's been too long, but the Mountain Goats are back on today's World Cafe.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with a special edition of the Up North Report. Large-scale data centers are on their way to northern Minnesota. Minnesota has seen rapid expansion of this type of infrastructure due to state tax exemptions, our cool climate, and relatively inexpensive power. As these data centers spread, communities across the country associate data centers with massive drains on the grid, excessive noise, as well as the millions of gallons of water used for cooling systems. Data centers house technology hardware, acting as facilities that run the internet and mobile applications, from powering artificial intelligence to storing family photos in the cloud. While the state legislature passed a bill late this session setting environmental and energy regulatory requirements for data centers, some lawmakers say it's not enough for these centers that can use hundreds of millions of gallons of water and as much power as the city of Minneapolis. The Hermantown City Council unanimously approved what's called an Alternative Urban Area-Wide Review, or AUAR, for the development of a 403-acre site earlier this month. Nearly 70% of the assessed area is identified as wetlands and is close to two different trout streams. Public officials in St. Louis County and Hermantown have recently come under scrutiny for signing non-disclosure agreements for the development of what's now acknowledged to be a data center, as initially reported by the Minnesota Star Tribune. No company name has yet been disclosed. The documents now available from the Environmental Quality Board include comments from citizens wondering if the AUAR process is appropriate, given the scale of the project and all the unknowns around power and water use, the possible air pollution from backup generators, as well as the noise levels. During the October meeting of the EQB, Clarissa Eck of Hermantown expressed her concern with the data center moving in next door.
The AUAR is not comprehensive. We have designated trout streams. We have old forests, 120-year-old oak trees, wildlife, significant environmental impacts. And what is happening right now is the city of Hermantown is trying to push this very fast. I live a quarter of a mile, and I just found out because the Star Tribune did a FOIA request, and we finally found out it was a data center.
The EQB began the first of two informational sessions on data centers, the first on Wednesday. The session discussed the multiple environmental review and regulatory requirements required for data centers, depending on any given facility's size, as well as energy and water needs. An alternative urban area-wide review differs in many ways from the environmental assessment worksheet and even the more rigorous environmental impact statement processes that are typically part of massive infrastructure projects. Sarah Layroll with the EQB describes the AUAR as a document that examines the geographic boundary that could have many different projects within it.
It is used in place of individual project-level EAWs or EISs, but it is limited to only applicable types of projects.
The EQB defines the AUAR as a hybrid of the Environmental Assessment Worksheet and Environmental Impact Statement review processes, allowing local governments to use the AUAR as a planning tool to assess anticipated development scenarios and their impact on the environment. While the Hermantown Data Center is not explicitly mentioned in their AUAR, it is referenced in the comments listing concerns about the need for further environmental review. During the EQB's public comment session, Ashlyn Kensior, a staff attorney for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, urged the board to require data centers to fall under a mandatory environmental impact statement category, placing a statewide agency as the responsible government unit.
And this would ensure that the cumulative potential impacts of data centers are taken into consideration, which is something that the individual cities right now simply don't have the capacity to do.
The EQB will accept public comment specifically on its role with the environmental review process, not necessarily on any specific project, through November 6 before its next meeting. In upcoming stories, we'll take a deeper look at the energy and water impacts of data centers and learn more about their future in the state. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, Phenology, and morning show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
From NPR, it's World Cafe. Hey, I'm Kaleo. You know, I really wasn't prepared to have someone sing Hamilton at me during an interview. Ever, really. But when you sit down with raconteur and human firework John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats, you need to be ready for anything. As you'll hear in the interview, Darnielle is referencing the brilliant songwriting of Lin-Manuel Miranda, who appears on the Mountain Goats' new album, Through This Fire, Across from Peter Balkin. The North Carolina band's 23rd studio album is a full-fledged musical. Today, John, along with longtime bandmates Matt Douglas and John Worster, will give us a sneak peek of the new record due out November 7th. Plus, John will talk about this year, 365 songs annotated, A Book of Days, which unpacks a good chunk of the Mountain Goats discography. But first, let's hear some music, shall we? From the stage of World Cafe Live, it's the Mountain Goats with Rocks in My Pocket.
Like a good luck charm for a soldier heading off into battle, I carried a stone in my pocket, something I found in Seattle. It vaguely resembled a face, and it looked like a headstone a little. Deep grooves from a wormer from years underwater, heading right down the middle. Some people name their cars or their guitars. Some things are too fragile to name. Some people live for the spotlight. Some live at the edge of the frame. Just a few days above surface, a lifetime below. Rocks in my pockets when I go. Stuck to the shoreline in the light of a torch, wrapped up in your bandage like a package on the porch. You were never gonna make it, I felt like you knew. But at least you'll have someone. For some of us that won't be true. Some people go down swinging, getting a few punches. Some learn to ride the currents, some never learn. Probably not gonna leave the slightest trace. When it's my turn, tie down the sails. When the crosswinds blow, rocks in my pockets when I go. We'll be right back. initials in the bark of a tree. Little signs of hope, like a good luck charm for a soldier. Mailed home in an envelope. Some people go it alone. Some need a friend. The weak ones get lucky. The strong ones stick around to see the end. Just a few days above surface, a lifetime below. Rocks in my pockets when I go. Rocks in my pockets when I go. Rocks in my pockets when I go.
Thank you.
Recorded live from the stage in Philadelphia, it's the Mountain Goats with Rocks in My Pockets. It's from their new studio album, Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin. Joining me to talk about it is the longtime founder of the Mountain Goats, John Darnielle. John, it is an absolute pleasure to meet. Thanks so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm having a good time.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So the new album, there's a lot to unpack with it. It starts with a dream.
That's right.
Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I use a little note-taking app, which I'm not shilling, but it's called Bear, and it's really useful to me. They tell you all your life that you're supposed to write your dreams down when you wake up.
Yeah.
If you want to remember them, that's a good process to have. I've resisted this most of my life because every creative writing thing they tell you to do sounds corny to me usually. Like, it's so, you know, and I don't keep a diary as a general, well, these days I do that too. I'm kind of interrogating all my resistance things at this point. But so I had a dream, and I grabbed my phone and I tapped it out and then I went back to bed.
Right.
And when I woke up, I didn't remember it again, but I opened up Bear to do something else. And there it was. And it said, Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin, making an album. That's the name of the album, right? And the dream was that we were working on an album and that was the title.
Right.
That was it, right? This is not a very interesting dream in a lot of ways.
It didn't reveal the story to
you. No. It was just, it was in process. And this is because, I mean, we're working all the time. And I said to myself, wouldn't it be funny if you did that? Lots of my ideas that I go through with start with like, oh, that would be hilarious.
Yeah. So what ended up becoming the story of Peter Balkin and the narrator and Adam, you know,
so
in this
Peter
situation.
Balkin is the captain of a fishing boat, and he's a long-standing. I mean, the way these fishing boats work is they just, you know, this is a life or job, like being a musician, where you just you go out, you fish, you have your contract, and he's been doing it for a long time, and he's got a crew of 15, and they hit bad weather, and 13 of them die, and 3 of them wash up on shore of, you wouldn't really call it an island, it's just a promontory, you know, and it's not a promontory, it's not connected to land, but they wash up someplace, and they're not going to be saved. They don't have any instruments, right? Mm-hmm. They forage or whatever. But Peter Balkin hit his head in the churn, and he starts to have visions of the apocalypse and of his own centrality in this thing. And imagining, you know, he's starving. It's like, you know, these people don't have food, and so they sort of form a band about it. But then it becomes clear that he's sick, and the narrator and Adam have to nurse him, you know, through his sort of delirium. Adam wanders off and dies, and that leaves two, and then Peter Balkin dies, and then the narrator sort of reflects on it a little bit, and then we're over. So it's a very upbeat sort of Christmas album.
Sure, and so when you make a concept record like that, when you tell a story like that, it screams musical. Maybe not necessarily, but
yeah.
I
love musicals is the thing.
It's like, did you know this was going to be a musical when you were writing these out chronologically?
Well, so Jenny from Thebes is what I call a fake musical.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, and all of my stuff to some extent or another works how, not all, but much of my stuff from the earliest days works how musical songs work, that they take place within an existing fictive framework.
Yeah.
Right? So when you hear, you know, when you hear 76 Trombones, it's not just a song. It's the guy trying to sell the music to River City, right? And trying to sell the band idea to River City. When you hear, for good at the end of Wicked, right? You are hearing people singing to each other having gone through something. There's a story that precedes the song and that enriches the song. My songs are mainly like that, except you don't get the additional data, right? I don't feed you a story. You as the listener have to put it together.
And for what goes on in between those songs.
And to me, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's what I like. Joni Mitchell writes like this too, you know, where like you don't get all the intel. You have to assemble it and participate as a listener, which I like. So I'd done that with Jenny from Thieves with the last one. I had a little dry run. But so yeah, I don't, whether they'll, I mean, for staging, who knows? Does somebody make an offer?
if anyone's out there listening, it's available. You might know a guy, though. You might know a couple
people. I know some guys, but the thing is, for one thing, I mean, you're talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's on the album, but he is a friend, you know, and I know that in this business, everybody prevails on their friends for favors, but I would be mortified to ask the guy who lent of his profound talent and vision to my record, can you help me get it staged? I mean, to me, that would be crap. You know, and
sure.
So,
you're not from Hollywood, are you?
I'm not. And but it's the music business is like that too. It's supposed to show up at parties and sort of edge your way around. Well, the fact that The Mountain Goats took 20 odd years for people to hear of us is testament to the fact that I don't want to do that. I would consider it the friendships you make along the way, the creative partnerships you engage in are much more important than the potential fame or money benefit that might accrue to you.
100%. Right? The next deal doesn't necessarily mean anything
But that he was on the album, we've been sharing demos with each other for over a decade, right? And when I started writing this one, I started saying, I'll do this thing. And he's a very supportive person. And he would say, you know, this is a good one. I remember the day I wrote Armies of the Lord, I said it to him. And I said, caught one. he said, you landed a whopper. And it feels really good when you share with fellow artists, you know.
You can't not, if a guy who has one of the biggest Broadway phenomena, Hamilton, you know, in his repertoire, and he's singing backing vocals on four tracks on your album, I can't envision that going, big picture wise, how's this looking? Because I would be feeding him every day that stuff.
He's the guy who wrote You'll Be Back, which is just a masterpiece. This is on Hamilton, right? It's the one that King George sings. Do you know this tune?
This is one where I embarrass myself and go, if it's past Oklahoma.
The price of my love's not a price that you're willing to pay. You cry. Oh, what's the next line? The sea.
Someone from the control room is yelling the lyrics.
Are they? When you see me go by, why so sad? Remember we made an arrangement when you went away. Now you're making me mad. Remember, despite our estrangement, I'm your man. You'll be back. Time will tell. You'll remember that I served you well. Right. This is great.
It's
songwriting.
Gorgeous.
This is astonishing songwriting. Yeah. And people have all kinds of opinions about anything that gets really big in the culture and they want to talk all bad about it. And to me, it's like, no, that's an ABBA song. That's the level that song is on. As you hear it once, when I listen, I will regret singing that song to you because it will be running around on a loop in my head for the next 5 days, right? Because it's just like Dancing Queen level of greatness, right? And so, so sharing the creative journey in that way is so great. And I was like, this is a Broadway-ish record. And so we hollered at him and he came up for the day. We were in Hurley, New York at Jerry Marotta's studio, Dreamland, and sang on four songs. It was amazing.
That's really cool. If you're just joining us on World Cafe, John Darnielle is here. The Mountain Goats new album is called Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin. More about the musical and John's new book in a bit. But first, I want to get into this song. This song fired me up. Dawn of Revelation. I mean, I think it's Tommy Stinson from The Replacements playing bass. You got Bonnie Light Horseman's Josh Kaufman.
Yeah, ripping a solo on this one.
Maybe you were playing the vibra slap, but this song takes off. I would love to know a little bit about where we're at in the story and the mood that you created with this song.
So in the story, this is where Peter Balkin is sort of announcing his insanity to his two surviving crewmates.
Okay.
He's announcing his vision of the apocalypse, his centrality in the, you know, when the apocalypse happens, presumably a bunch of people disappear from Earth, right? But every apocalyptic prophet has his own version of that, right? Mm-hmm. And his isn't especially coherent, but it centers around them being the three people who will lead whoever's left on Earth to safety and prosperity, right? And the big line in it is, no one here is going to die alone, which is like, this is the nature of prophecy, that it sort of has to err. And of course, if you have three people and they're all going to die, unless they all die at the same moment, somebody's going to die alone, in fact. And so that's the sort of desperate irony of the song.
Let's take a listen to it from the new album. Here is Dawn of Revelation from the Mountain Goats on World Cafe.
We who gather by this fire to remember who we were, to recall the days of yore, to recall the days before. Hear the crackling, stoke the flames, conjure long forgotten names. Look long enough and see where the reverent wriggles free. I will turn these stones to bread, and all who hunger will be fed. Plates will shift and the earth will groan, and no one here is gonna die alone.
Mountain Goats, Dawn of Revelation here on World Cafe. John Darnielle is my guest. The Mountain Goats have a new album called Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin. So you talked about how your last album was a fake musical. What actually goes into the logistics of making what you consider like a real, honest to goodness, go for it?
Well, you have to have a book. You have to have a script. You know, it's like, this is also a fake musical, right? This is not, it's not being produced or anything. It's like, you have to have a musical is a big collaboration between the people writing, unless it's like, you know, there are people who just do the whole thing themselves. I mean, that's what Hamilton is. But I just write a bunch of songs that exist within a fictive universe and imagine it in a sort of a musical setting.
If you imagine it as a musical, say, versus a traditional album, does that affect instrumentation? And
yes.
Because that's kind of, I think more, it's less about the sort of lyrical aspect of it and more like, how do you make it sound like this is, you know, this could be
well,
on Broadway
because yeah, there's several arc, songs. It needs to have, so this is a funny thing in Broadway stuff is that a lot of musicals are, including Wicked, are kind of notorious for like the first act is front-loaded with bangers.
Yeah,
right?
You want the hits.
And then the second one is like, well, that's fine. That's pretty good. You know, remember the good one from the first? Like, you know, and then to me, in the second act of Wicked, For Good is really good, but otherwise it's fairly thin on the ground. I'm sorry for any giant Wicked fans, but after Defying Gravity, you have sort of peaked, right?
Right.
Which is a masterpiece. So if you're writing it this way, like one thing I was really excited about I saw Merrily We Roll Along, which was revived in New York, which is a Sondheim musical that bombed in the 70s.
I'm not familiar with that.
So it bombed, and it dissolved a partnership, you know, for a while. It was a huge disappointment, but it's not bad, actually. It's like there's a lot of reasons why things don't succeed. And so it was revived, starring Lindsay Mendez and Jonathan Groff, who played King George in Hamilton, and I love them still this way. Daniel Radcliffe, is that his name?
From Harry Potter.
So when I saw this play, I saw it with Ada Calhoun, who's an author and a friend of mine. And when Radcliffe comes on, she says, "So that's Daniel Radcliffe." I said, what does he do? You know, and she said, "Harry Potter." I haven't seen it at Harry Potter. I haven't seen anything. If it was a visual medium, I probably didn't see it. So I had no idea who he was. But I was like, this guy's really good. Very good actor. You know, because the thing is, I'm sure he's fine in movies. I've never seen any of those.
But he's a good stage
on stage,
guy.
He is magic. He's incredibly good at being on stage. And to me, theater, theater is special, and they had incredible chemistry, the three of them, because it's only a three-person play. So there's a couple of other people who walk on and off, but it's mainly Mendez and Groff and Radcliffe. But the thing is, where I'm coming back to what you asked about, it opened with an overture, an instrumental overture. You sit down, and you see the orchestra is in a glass box up there playing Sondheim, right? So it's jazz-informed, but it's not jazz, but it's got a lot real cool extensions, major sevens and nines, very, you know, sort of goes into these wistful pockets, but it's got a lot of momentum. I mean, Sondheim is the greatest of all time. And so it's beautiful. And I was listening to that, and I forget if I'd start writing the album or not, but when I did start writing the album, I said to Matt Douglas, I want an overture. I want to do the thing. I want there to be a musical. I want the first track to be something that presents all the major melodic themes of the record. So you hear in the overture that we have, you hear the main melody from Through This Fire, you hear the main melody from Dawn of Revelation, and you hear several, right? You hear a bunch of them, and they're all worked in there. Worcester's drumming on the overture is so astonishing. It's like when he finally drops into the straight four at the end, it's one of the most exciting things. So that's one of the things, despite the fact I don't play on it and it's assembled from my parts, it's one of the proudest things I've ever done, you know, for me.
Let's listen to a little bit of Overture from the album here on World Cafe. World Cafe. John Darnielle is my guest. The new album is available now. It is called Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin. So how do you stick the landing with a song like Broken to begin with?
So that actually, that's the listener has to tell me whether that happens, because that's a major anxiety inducing thing. If you're trying to actually, like, we don't normally say this will be the last song on the album. You record the album and you listen to it and you sequence it and you say, this sounds like the way to go. I thought about how the storyline begins with people who are shipwrecked on a place where there is no food or hope of rescue, right? So that's what I thought. It's like, you know, this was a no hope situation from the second it happened, right? Like everybody, you know, like in when Hank Schrader in that in the second to last episode of Breaking Bad is on the ground.
He's gonna die.
And somebody starts saying, I think Walter White starts saying, you know, Hank, tell them it'll be okay and they'll let you go. And he looks up at Jack and says, no. This was already over the second he saw me. Yeah. I forget what the line he says. He says, this has already been, there are no options here, actually. Which to me, that ties into a long-standing obsession of mine with Greek tragedy and my what I wrote my senior thesis about in college, which is that in Greek tragedy, there's a thing that was already going to happen. And all the people in the play are laboring under the illusion that there's any other way that it's going to turn out.
Right? Like the hand of the fates?
Well, it's not fate. They use the word, but it's because the machine of tragedy is working, right? Any resistance is going to play into the end. There aren't any choices. When Oedipus meets the oracle on the road, right? The oracle's not saying, well, here's a thing that's going to happen if you don't do right. The oracle's saying, here's a thing that is going to happen. and that's what Broken to Begin With is. It's a reflection by the final surviving speaker that there wasn't any prayer, actually.
Let's take a listen to it. It's the Mountain Goats live on World Cafe.
Bringing nations to their knees, could come across the remnants of our campsite and never know it kept three people warm at night. Survey the flimsy architecture, idly make a few conjectures, scribble some conclusions in a ledger, never knowing better. Like anything you ever come across, before you knew about it, it got lost. It was broken to begin with. It was broken to begin with. It was like this when we got here. It was broken to begin with. When the archaeologists arrived, no proof that we were ever here alive. Me and Peter Balkin and you, friend, till the dream ran out of oxygen. Is this not what you wanted from the sea? Is this not what the waves require of me? Isn't this what we suspect we'll see on the day we finally get free? And if that day turns out to be today, maybe that's okay. It was broken to begin with. It was broken to begin with. It was like this when we got here. It was like that when we got here. It was broken to begin with.
Live, the Mountain Goats, Broken to Begin With, and it's from their soon-to-be-released new album, Through This Fire, across from Peter Balkin. Coming up, more with culture gourmand John Darnielle, including talking about his newest book, This Year, 365 Songs Annotated, plus a performance of one of the Mountain Goats' all-time greats. That's coming up in a minute on World Cafe. Welcome back. It's World Cafe. I'm Kaleo. Let's continue our session with the Mountain Goats and John Darnielle. Their 23rd studio album drops on November 7th, a full-fledged musical called Through This Fire Across from Peter Balkin. Darnielle is also set to release a book of his lyrics December 2nd called This Year, 365 Songs Annotated, a Book of Days, named for one of the Mountain Goats' most beloved songs this year. Let's get back into it. I know this book was several years in the making.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how it evolved to what it became.
So this is inside baseball stuff that probably is like, you know, runs counter to people's ideas of inspiration. But my agent pitched this idea to me, right? Because I have a resistance to revisiting old work in any way.
Yeah.
I like revisiting it in the context of a live set. I love to take an old song and see where it goes. But I'm not into sort of, raising my hand and say, remember this thing that you liked, the song this year? Right? So I don't like to do that. But it was during lockdown, and there was no guarantee that anybody was ever going to tour again. It's like we didn't, yeah. It was a very intense time for everybody who worked in public-facing stuff, you know, and especially for musicians. And Chris Parris-Lamb, my agent, said, hey, I had this idea, you know, it's like we could, you want to do a lyrics book? A lot of people do that. And I said, yeah, no, I know, because I judge them, right? It's like, harshly, if you publish a book of your lyrics, when I could just go online and look up your lyrics, why do I have to buy your book?
You got to make a reason for me to want it.
Yeah. No, if I'm making a book, I worship books.
Yeah.
My first ambition was to write a book. And so if I'm making a book, it's extraordinarily important to me that it be worth the reader's time,
yeah.
Right? That the reader come to it, expecting even whatever expectations they have, it's important that I both exceed them and confound them in some way, right? Mm-hmm. So I really want them to have the process of reading a book, right? Yeah. And so I wasn't quite sure what to do, but he pitched this. I was like, yeah, sounds okay, why not? You know, as I said a little earlier, I'm at a stage in my life where a lot of my biases, I want to interrogate them. I want to ask, here's a thing you always say no to.
Oh, yeah.
Try
yeah.
saying yes, right? And so I did that, and I said, and the idea was a complete lyrics, and it was about 2 years ago. Chris got the idea in 2020, and 2 years ago, after having done a lot of work on the collected idea of all of them, mm-hmm. I got the idea to do 365 of them, and I couldn't believe. I called everybody in my business. Say, I've got the title. Check it out. Check this out. You know, I was
it's like a revelation.
Oh, I was
man.
Preening. I was like insufferable. You know, like just, hey, are you awake? Check it out. It's called This Year.
Perfect.
And then for a long time, there was going to be an appendix with the rest of the lyrics, and I hired a research assistant to get all those together. But it felt performative in a way that I didn't like, you know, mm-hmm. just have all these other ones that, without commentary, they're necessarily having small type. They have a giant brick of a book at that point. And so me and Sean, my editor, had back and forth about that because he was pretty attached to the idea of it being all of them. But I think it works better as a book, and the book is primary in my thinking of things.
There's always volume two down the road if you want
well,
it. Okay, I know, okay, maybe not.
Took me 4 or 5 years.
Sure, no, totally. Okay, so there was a time where you thought lyrics weren't meant for the page.
That's right.
And I shouldn't get you started on it, but
that's
I'm going
right.
to get you started on it just a little bit.
All right, you say just a little bit, but somebody get my man a glass of water. So poetry, well, writing generally doesn't become writing the way we think of it until literacy takes hold, right? Prior to that, did we have poetry? Yes, we did, mm-hmm. right? Oral tradition for many, many, many years, right? And poetry, even when literacy begins to rise, the way poetry would have been understood is that there's a guy who sits across from you and says, what way gardenia in your deum, right? And he's memorized the poem. That's the first line of Beowulf, right? I probably pronounced it poorly, but it means we were Danes in days of yore, I think. But that was the job of the poet, was to remember the poems that he had learned from the poets who went before him or her and to perform them for other people. It was music, right? It might have been accompanied by instruments or not, mm-hmm. right? But that's what it was. Poetry lives in the air. That's the line that I say a lot, right? Now, I don't think this is true of modern poetry. I think most modern poetry is written for the page. And there's a lot of really fun and interesting work done on what happens if the way I'm reading is with my mouth closed. But silent reading does not become a thing
for hundreds of years after reading. Everybody was reading aloud when reading was new. You would stand at the at your text and you would say, Juan the Rapro with it short as sota, the Dracht of March has persed to the rota, and so forth. It wasn't silent.
People wouldn't be reading this on their own in quiet.
No.
Wow.
You read aloud. Because that's where it is alive. Now, we do a different thing now that is also interesting and cool, right? I don't read my novels aloud when I'm reading something, but then I do often stop if something's really cool to hear it in the air, because sound is magic. Sound is primal. The first thing you do the second you're born is sing your first note, right?
Yeah.
And you do. It's like, and that's what the sounds of everything are such a part of it. And when you're reading, you have sounds in your head, but they're competing with others. And once you put it out in the air, then it rushes to the front of the line. And so, well, these are all the thoughts of a young man who has a lot of theories, right? And so,
sure.
And I liked theories, but I had my other theory of non-imagematic poetry, poetry without images, right? That didn't get very far. But I liked theories, manifestos, you know, things like that. And that was one of my big ones when I first started making records. You know, the question, you want a lyric sheet? No, I don't. I want people to hear them. I want them to receive them in the ear and do that work, because it's a different type of work than reading a lyric. I don't want them to read lyrics while they're listening. I want them to be having this experience. It's kind of a, you know, dictatorial way of being an artist. But yeah, so that was the way I thought of it forever. I didn't have a lyric sheet at all until I think in League with Dragons, and then I let that one have lyrics that are almost illegible. And so, which I enjoyed that.
Here, finally, this is what you get.
There you go. Right, so, but the internet meant that my notion of there not being printed lyrics was obviated by
someone else is going to do
it. If I don't tell you where the line stops, somebody else will do it for me, and they're going to get it wrong most of the time. You know, like, I don't use a lowercase I. I use an uppercase I, but all the lyrics...
Wow. So this drives you...
No, I don't care, but at the same time, I'm like, well, if you are wanting to see what it looks like to me...
From your vantage.
You are not seeing that right there. I punctuate. I have a lot of punctuation. Nobody can get my punctuation right, because it's a very... You know, it's a prosaic part of my process. So I was pretty happy to be able to do some of that. Just sort of, even though I think canons are nonsense, it's like whatever somebody else, why hear it with a lowercase I? Hey, you're the listener. You own half of this, you know. So,
yeah, half of the experience belongs to you once it's out in the universe.
Even more than half, really, to some extent, although I'm not so radical on interpretive strategies that I think like any reading of a text is valid. I don't think that's true. If like, you know, if I write a song, you say, well, to me, this song is about my dog. No, I've never met your dog. It's not.
I mean, like that's how you interpret it, but that's not what it's about.
Oh, you can do that. That's the thing. It's like, that's a fun thing to do with texts, right? But it's not to say that then all readings are of equal weight. I don't think it's true.
Yeah. John Darnielle is here. The Mountain Goats new album is available now through This Fire across from Peter Balkin. You know, I read the comment, the annotation for this year, which is the song that we're going to close with,
yes,
the live performance. This one you thought was I don't know if you've told the story before, but to find out that you thought this record was unfinished.
Yeah.
And you were going to add more, and someone convinced you.
Like a rhyme for this year, something like that. The chorus is the same line a couple times. I don't do that much. In the early days, sometimes a song would end with a single line repeated a bunch of times. I was very interested in repetition. But as I grew as a songwriter, I was more interested in formal choruses that have like either an AA rhyme or an ABAB rhyme.
Yeah.
But it was Peter Hughes, our old bassist, who was like, I said, it was a moment of an old friend doing a good read on another, on his friend, because I said, you know, so I think this one's not done yet, you know, but I'll fix the chorus later and get a rhyme. And Peter said, look, I'm not going to tell you how to write your song.
Yeah.
You know, because I think he suspected that if he said, don't do that, I would go, I'm going to do what I want. And so I'm not really that kind of person, but writers tend to get that way. And so he said, look, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I really think, you know, I mean, I reacted very strongly to the song just the way it is. You know, I think we're probably done here, but you can do what you want. You know? And I was like,
really,
you know,
good choice of words.
And he was careful about it. And Peter had a heavy investment in those songs. He was very, his responses were very important to me as I would send them along. Up the Wolves is as good as it is because Peter really responded strongly to it and wrote a bass line that is a big part of the song. And so, yeah.
Let's take a listen to this year. It's the Mountain Goats on World Cafe.
Ben Lochran over there on bass.
and listen to the engine roar. Yeah.
Respect to Psychotic Norman. We're the Mountain Goats.
Recorded live on World Cafe, Mountain Goats, this year. Mountain Goats, new album, new book from John Darnielle. John, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure entirely mine.
Well, we'll do it again sometime.
See you then.
We're back in a minute with more World Cafe.
Debuting on October 16th, KEXE brings you a brand new podcast, Season Watch, exploring the seasonal wonders of life in northern Minnesota. Voices like Charlie Mitchell, John Latimer, and our listeners. Find it on most podcast platforms. Season Watch is a podcast for those who are curious about the changes in nature.
Welcome back to World Cafe. Thanks again to John Darnielle and the Mountain Goats. Through This Fire, Across from Peter Balkin is due out November 7th. And this year, 365 songs annotated, cataloging a good chunk of the Mountain Goats discography, releases early December. Never had anyone sing to me during an interview like that before. Probably won't ever happen again, so I'll never forget it. Video performances and the interview are up on our YouTube channel. Let's get back into it with Gigi Perez and Sailor Song.
Breathe deep, I'm inhaling.
Love, putting the wraps on this edition of The Cafe. Before we go, huge thanks again to the Mountain Goats, John, Matt, and John, and hat tip to our senior producer, Kimberly Junod, for her work on this session. Appreciate our affiliates across this country who support public radio and make this show possible. We produce this program from WXPN at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm Stephen Kaleo. This has been World Cafe from NPR.
World Cafe is supported by Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research